Congressman Hollingsworth draws heat. Indiana officials cautiously optimistic. Plus, primary election changes and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending April 17th, 2020.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Indiana Congressman Trey Hollingsworth found himself in the spotlight for comments he made on an Indianapolis radio show. WFIU-WTIU's Adam Pinsker reports.
Speaking on WIBC's Tony Katz show Tuesday, Congressman Trey Hollingsworth said no amount of legislation out of Washington will get Americans back to work and school amid the COVID-19 pandemic. Echoing President Trump's call to get the economy open as soon as possible, Hollingsworth told Katz during the radio broadcast that heading off an economic disaster should take priority over public health.
It is policymakers' decision to put on our big boy and big girl pants and say, this is the lesser of these two evils, and it is not zero evil, but it is the lesser of these evils, and we intend to move forward that direction.
We reached out to Hollingsworth for comment, but did not hear back. However, Hollingsworth's office told USA Today he believes the U.S. should make as much of the economy work as possible while simultaneously working to reduce disease transmission.
How bad does this look for Congressman Hollingsworth? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanis, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, State House reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, all joining us remotely. I'm here in the studio, Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Mike O'Brien, Hollingsworth is far from the only person saying things like this, although perhaps he was a little more, let's say, blunt about it. Does that make what he said okay?
Well, I think this is a case of it's not really what he said, it's how he said it, right? The big girl pants, big boy, big girl pants comment, I think, just implied that our elected officials like President Trump or Governor Holcomb aren't making just gut-wrenching decisions and difficult decisions on a daily basis when they try to balance economic downfall and protecting the public health. We are moving into a period where the president laid out this week, this kind of three-phase start to the economy reopening, and Governor Holcomb on Friday and at his press conference started talking about Indiana's moving that direction next month and working regionally with other governors in the Midwest. We are at some point going to have to assess, and we're probably coming close to it, what are the public health consequences of a recession? What are the economic consequences of, you know, unemployment, it's linked to life expectancy or food insecurity or homelessness and poverty? So, I mean, there's a public health consequence to continuing to freeze the economy for people that were already at, financially at risk, but we got to do that in a safe and responsible way, and I think that's what we've heard from our elected officials this week.
Yeah, we're going to talk about this in the next topic, but Indiana leaders are cautiously optimistic about what they're seeing, and there is conversation starting in a more public way about what slowly reopening the economy looks like. So was Congressman Hollingsworth here just inartfully making a similar point?
No, what he was doing was channeling exactly what Donald Trump implied in his press conference. And that is that, you know, when we talk about reopening the economy and we balance the lives of poor people and black people and immigrants against a vibrant economy, the vibrant economy wins. And they're making no bones about that. And it's really reprehensible because when you're talking about this in terms of getting back to work, white collar workers are working from home. OK, so what we're talking about is what happened, for example, in that pork plant in South Dakota. You're talking about immigrants working close together. You're talking about service providers in restaurants and other venues that are going to be at risk if we get back too soon. And so, yeah, the very cavalier attitude expressed by some Republicans, including the president and Trey Hollingsworth, is really worrisome because it seems to value some types of human life more than others. And this is where it seems to me unions can play a very big role, and the importance of unions in this can't be overstated, to say we're not going to let our people go back into situations where their health or their life is at risk without sufficient safeguards and without some reassurance that the testing is being done in an appropriate manner, and we haven't seen that happen yet.
Nikki Kelly, to ask about sort of maybe the political fallout from comments like these. We haven't really seen other Indiana elected officials saying things like this other than perhaps one state lawmaker down south. But could Trey Hollingsworth be in some trouble in the fall because of these sorts of comments?
I don't think he'll be in any trouble in the fall, but I definitely think this might be the first time anyone's heard his name in a lot of parts of the state. If you're not in his district, he's not a very, you know, kind of open, flashy congressman. So for this to be the first introduction for some people calling, you know, the lesser of two evils being people dying versus the economy, that'll definitely get some attention that I'm not sure, you know, he really wanted. And he, you know, came out the next day and acted like he was clarifying things, but he didn't really say it any different.
John Schwanes, kind of a similar question. Do you think Trey Hollingsworth sees any backlash from this long term?
Well, I don't think he won over any fans necessarily in the party leadership, in the caucus leadership within House Republican Caucus in D.C. I don't think he necessarily impressed some of the national fundraisers or some of the political operatives who operate in and around Washington, D.C. However, I don't think it hurt him probably with a good number of his constituents who probably are feeling some of the same sentiments, not saying it perhaps in as inartful a way. But if you take, for instance, some research that came out this week from Stanford University that suggested that there's a real partisan divide in the way that people are viewing the shelter at home orders, and not only are viewing them, but how the extent to which they're complying. And Democrats, generally speaking, once you account for all sorts of various factors, according to the folks at Stanford, said there's about a 20 percentage point disparity between Republicans and Democrats. So if that's accurate research and you can extrapolate and assume that Trey Hollingsworth's district, which put him in office and therefore would presumably skew somewhat Republican, it did in that election, there would be therefore a number of people in his in his district who would say, you know what, he may not have said it the right way, but he's got a point.
All right. Well, I just alluded to this, but Indiana state officials this week say they are seeing encouraging signs in COVID-19 data across the state, but they're also emphasizing the need for continued vigilance as that talk of reopening the economy intensifies. Governor Eric Holcomb says he'll be monitoring the facts on the ground to decide when businesses can start to reopen.
We'll be looking at our supply chain. Is it sufficient? Our PPE levels, our hospital beds, our vents. We'll be looking at our, like I said, our testing ability, our tracing.
Holcomb also says it's possible reopening the economy might start on a regional level rather than statewide.
It'll be a rolling reopen. It won't be all at once. It won't be flipping a light switch.
The governor indicated there will have to be new workplace accommodations made to ensure employee safety before businesses reopen, but he didn't elaborate on what those accommodations would look like. And Delaney, if our numbers do get better, there's going to be increasing pressure across a lot of sectors on Governor Holcomb to start reopening, even if he does it in this way that he's suggesting, which is slowly, sector by sector, you know, with accommodations and all that. But how is he going to withstand the pressure of some people saying, well, my neighbor's back to work, but I'm not back at work. What the heck?
Well, you have that now. I mean, you have some workers working and some aren't, and you're going to get, when you have the fear that you have among all the people, you're going to have that kind of attack. But, you know, that's why you get elected, to show leadership. I was encouraged by the fact that he was talking with the governors in surrounding states about a regional approach to reopening the state. I don't think you can do it sector by sector. What do you say, Brown County's okay? So does that mean everybody goes to Brown County or nobody can go to Brown County? I mean, I don't even know what that means. The problem is that we are not testing enough. That's the problem. We are completely failing in that regard. And for example, I hope there's something in the numbers that he found encouragement about, but the fact that we doubled the number of reported cases from Tuesday to Thursday was pretty worrisome from my point of view. And the idea that we can open without the testing, we've tested what, something north of 50,000 people in a state with 6.7 million. I mean, Illinois, with twice the population, is testing six times the number of people. And we can't know what's going on in terms of what the next outbreak is going to be, or who's had it and survived, or who is a carrier and asymptomatic, unless we can do much more massive testing than we're doing. Michael, so I don't know how you make an intelligent decision with less than the facts that you need.
Well, to that spike in cases, they were asked about that today, and that is because we are testing more people. But, Mike O'Brien, today the governor announced that he will extend the stay-at-home order, not a full 2 weeks. He announced today, Friday, that he will extend it on Monday when it expires until May 1st as a way to update this a little more regularly as it goes according to the facts on the ground, as he likes to say. So how much is that pressure going to start to build on him even more now over these next couple of weeks?
Well, I think Ann's right. There has been that pressure for the last month, and there wasn't consistency in who was able to work, and companies as they voluntarily shut down here and there versus when the stay-at-home order came out, and he's addressed that directly. I mean, clearly there's people out there that still think this is all overdone and it's too much and it wasn't worth it. And he's been very clear that he doesn't believe that the steps they took saved lives and continue to save lives. So I think testing is critical. I mean, one thing that should provide some hope is where new tests are being developed, where you're not getting the swab up your nose and then you have to wait 3 days. They're coming out with tests and trace tests and serum tests. They can see if you already had it. And that's going to be critical in this if you're going to be permitted to be around other people or reopen an office without protocols in place. And the state's receiving plans from businesses, and they've reached out to associations and other groups to come up with ideas on how to safely do this. And so I think that's really what we're going to see between now and May 1st is a real analysis of what does this look like, because it's not going to be what it was before.
Yeah, John Schwanis, we've talked before on the show about how important compliance is to making this all work for us. And what we're hearing from the governor and Dr. Box is that the numbers they're seeing are encouraging, so that the compliance has been encouraging, obviously. But quickly, John, as things start to slowly reopen, is compliance going to be more difficult? Because some people are going to say, well, they get to reopen, so why don't I get to reopen?
Sure. I think that's a natural human instinct. And if, in fact, as has been discussed, if restaurants, say, are allowed to open before bars and taverns, people may have, I mean, you can argue that why that would be the case in terms of proximity and human interaction. But people will start to say, hey, let's loosen the strings here a little bit for everybody. But in the final analysis, it seems to me that Anthony Fauci got it right this week. The most quotable, one of the many quotable things he said, which is that the timeline is dictated by the virus. And I think within that context, and I don't think Eric Holcomb would disagree with that, but I think within that context, he's doing a couple of things that are smart. A, he's leaving himself as many options as possible. He's not saying, as some other governors have done, I'm going to go to May 15th. I'm going to go to we may not have anything all summer, as has been suggested on the West Coast with public gatherings and so forth. I think the governor has been very measured. He's looking at initially 2 weeks interval increments. Now it's down, as you pointed out, Brandon, less than that. I think that's smart. And the other thing he's doing that's probably trying to bring the public along with him in terms of their sentiment is not to spring any surprises. So today, for instance, he was foreshadowing or giving people a fair warning of what was coming on Monday with the next executive orders. I think it's a smart move to get people conditioned. Don't be surprised when this happens.
Yeah. All right. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, when should Governor Holcomb reopen Indiana's economy? Early May, late May, June, or July or later? Last week's question, is Indiana's stay-at-home order effective? 61% of you say yes, it strikes the right balance. Only 8% think Governor Holcomb has gone too far, while 31% say he should have gone farther. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Indiana will hold some in-person voting opportunities for its June 2nd primary election. The state already extended vote by mail to any Hoosier who wants to cast a ballot that way. But Secretary of State Connie Lawson said this week some voters feel strongly about going to their polling place. The state will limit in-person voting to just 1 week leading up to and including Election Day on June 2nd.
We didn't want to have in-person voting only on Election Day because we felt like that would be too many people congregating at the same time.
Normally, in-person early voting lasts about a month before the election. Lawson says Indiana is also applying for nearly $8 million in federal funding to help address COVID-19 safety concerns.
We are using that money to purchase masks, gloves, hand sanitizer, cleaning and disinfecting supplies for voting systems, electronic poll books, and general services.
Lawson says the state will also make a push, particularly on social media, to recruit more poll workers, especially young people. John Schwanes, put frankly, is this a safe move?
Well, I would, it's probably, it's the best we can do under the circumstances. It's interesting that the Secretary of State would talk about not wanting to keep in-person live voting open longer than 1 week, because then you would have too many people concentrated. And that seems a little counterintuitive. I mean, my sense is that the longer that the polls are open, the more opportunity you would have for people to come at their convenience and therefore not overlap with other individuals during a shorter period of time. But be that as it may, if in fact there's a sentiment that people want to vote, great. And I think there are people like that. Great. You know, you don't want to curtail democracy here. But I think within that, by encouraging people to use mail-in balloting and to extend the deadlines in those regards, that's smart. Now, if I were a physician, a public health physician, I'd probably say the smartest thing to do would be to just do everything by mail. But again, we're dealing with unknown circumstances, with unprecedented situations, and we're all making it up to a certain extent as we go. I would just compliment, though, all Indiana officials involved in the electoral process, both sides of the aisle, for avoiding seemingly all of the kind of rancor that we've seen in some other states, Wisconsin, for instance. Everybody seems to be playing nicely in the sandbox as it relates to letting people express their sentiments at the ballot box.
Yeah, Nikki Kelly, there's no question that Indiana will not see the kind of disastrous reaction that we saw in Wisconsin with holding their election. But how difficult is it actually going to be to do this in-person voting when we're talking about poll workers and the like?
Yeah, I mean, counties have already said they're having trouble. I think a key base of their poll workers are, you know, more elderly Hoosiers, and they might have chronic health conditions and stuff like that. So the most vulnerable population is probably not going to be there to run these polls. So they're talking about reaching out to high schoolers and college kids and unemployed Hoosiers and that kind of thing. But, you know, I don't know how many people are going to be willing to go do that and to clean the machine between every person who votes, stuff like that.
Nikki Kelly, Ann Delaney, this is more than that. Even early in-person voting would start more than a month from now. Given how fast things are changing, is it an okay thing that we are going to at least offer some in-person voting?
I don't have a problem with offering some in-person voting if it means that much to people, but I do have a problem with the fact that the state isn't mailing out applications for absentee ballots to everybody in the state. Marion County's doing that. They're asking for $8 million. Are they going to spend $8 million on hand sanitizer? Come on. They have enough money to mail out those ballots. They have enough money then to mail out the applications, mail out the ballots for those who send them in, and probably put return postage on it. And it's about time we got to the 21st century, where we've been lagging behind in turnout so badly for so many years. This is an opportunity to reach out to people who are stuck home and have time to actually think about the election and actually vote. And I think that's something we ought to be encouraging, not discouraging, which is what Connie Lawson is doing by not mailing out statewide applications.
Mike O'Brien, Connie Lawson did say at that press conference this week that she encourages people to vote absentee because it will make everything a lot easier in terms of, you know, social distancing and all that when it comes to in-person voting. But should she be taking more concrete steps to make that a little easier?
Yeah, maybe. I don't have a problem mailing out. If it's $8 million, I mean, these elections cost millions of dollars anyway, so I wouldn't have a problem if she wanted to go that direction. I think if you put this in context, the original question, is it safe? it's 6 weeks from now. And if we start gradually opening, reopening the Indiana economy starting in May, you know, by June 2nd, we could, if we didn't allow in-person voting, you'd have a situation where you don't have in-person voting, but the Denny's is, you know, you can go sit and have, you know, a bunch of Denny's.
Yeah, so. but Mike, the difference is, though, you have a lot of people, even if we have a reopening at that point, a lot of people, particularly the elderly with pre-existing conditions, are going to be much more nervous, and they may not be willing to go out despite an, quote, open economy.
If we can make that easier, I think we should.
Okay.
Well, Indiana Democrats will hold their 2020 state convention online amid ongoing concerns about the impact of COVID-19. The move to a virtual and remote convention set for June 13th was unanimously approved by the party's state central committee and announced Tuesday. Democrats choose their nominees for lieutenant governor and attorney general at this year's convention. They also elect the state's delegates to the Democratic National Convention. Those votes will take place via mail-in ballot. In a statement, party chair John Zodi says vote by mail makes the virtual convention possible. Voting by mail, he says, is safe, secure, and convenient. Nikki Kelly, obviously Republicans have to be thinking about this too, and they actually indicated just today that they are starting to make plans or contingencies at least for if they can't have an in-person convention. Isn't that right?
Yeah, they basically passed some rules to give the chairman the ability to basically pull the trigger on a mail-in convention if need be in May. And while I think everyone's interested in the attorney general race on the Republican side, obviously, on one hand, you could see that the turnout for voting would be higher because obviously a lot of people aren't going to travel to Indianapolis. But also, I think Curtis Hill is already making a little bit of noise on his Facebook about he wouldn't like mail-in voting because people would have to rank their choices ahead of time for second, third ballots, things like that.
Yeah, John Schwanes, how much for Republicans is that how much is that attorney general race on the Republican side going to complicate what they have to do with their convention?
Well, it is a complicator, and that's certainly the one that everybody's talking about, including, I'm sure, people who are involved in organizing the convention or the virtual convention. For the reason that Nikki just mentioned, it really changes, perhaps, the number of delegates who will actually be participating and casting, expressing their sentiments. And now this, another perhaps crass way to look at this is we've talked before on this show about the awkwardness that would come if, in fact, Republicans nominate to seek another term, Curtis Hill, somebody who, of course, has been, ridiculed or certainly criticized by Eric Holcomb and others in party leadership. And we've often joked about that, the awkwardness that comes with that moment on stage where they get together for raising each other's hands with their other ticket mates. And basically that's the photo that will be seen for months to come. Hey, everybody's in their basements or in their living rooms.
That certainly prevents the photo. Now, Mike O'Brien, I think you may know some people who are involved in making these decisions. Are Republicans, though, heading towards a situation where Curtis Hill can, if the result doesn't go his way, Curtis Hill can raise a big storm about how it was handled because of the public health crisis?
You know, the irony of this is that the only reason we're considering some kind of alternative, not in-person voting at the convention is because of Curtis Hill and the attorney general's race. I mean, the process that we have absent this, it could still be illegal to gather that many people together by mid or late June, so we may not be able to legally have a convention. People need to consider that. And the fallback for that by party rule is the state committee votes, and Curtis Hill loses that vote all day long. So if we don't have an alternative, and mail is really the only alternative, then he's done. Then that's it. He is no longer the state's candidate for attorney general if we can't have a state convention.
Ann Delaney from the Democrat side, this feels like a no-brainer. Do you think there will be Do you think that this will be a better situation in terms of voting by mail? Because they also have a contested race for attorney general.
Well, I think they have to vote by mail because Curtis Hill better be careful what he wishes for because Mike's absolutely right. If no convention is held, mail-in or otherwise, then state committee fills the ballot, and guess who loses?
All right. Well, finally, as Hoosiers are spending a lot more time at home amid the COVID-19 pandemic, many are exploring ways to entertain themselves during these periods of self-isolation. So, Ann Delaney, what have you been doing as you've been spending a lot more time at home?
Shopping for baby gifts. I think we're going to have, you know, I saw a story that our population growth was the lowest in history. I don't think that's going to be the case come 8 or 9 months from now.
Mike O'Brien, you've got kids at home. What have you guys been doing to entertain yourselves?
A lot of puzzles, a lot of Legos, a lot of e-learning these days. I bet you would be proud of me. I built my own Lego Corvette. So
I am a big fan of that one.
It's probably as close as you're ever going to get.
All right. Well, that is Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Stay safe, stay healthy, and join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.